taking, making payments and saving for more fees and taking. Every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Back live in the studio again after a two-week hiatus. And all of us are very glad to be with you live again. Well, it's your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, talk, more. And what happened this week? Well, actually, what happened over the last 3 weeks? And I've got a lot to take the crew to task for today after we quickly run down on this. Well, a steadily recovering Bitcoin had a flash crash, and $1,000 in a matter of hours was wiped out, and a month of gains and theories why abound. We'll take that up, but we know the influence of this show, and I left it here in the hands of the crew, and what happens to Bitcoin? I go out of the country, and this is what I came back to. We'll take that all up and more here in just a second. Well, what else? Well, one reason could be the activation of a long-dormant $800 million Bitcoin Silk Road wallet. And I put a question mark on that because there seems to be so many theories on what it is. And we'll go to the co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com shortly because he's going to shake it all down for us. Goldman Sachs cries fake news on reports they have dropped their cryptocurrency plans. Meanwhile, they load up on high-power execs for those same plans. And in just a little bit, Kara Haas is going to break down the upcoming IPO of the largest Bitcoin miner on the planet, Bitmain. And believe me, I've gone over the voluminous, massive show prep that she did for this. And there's a lot to cover there. And then, coming up, as if one professional finance woman wasn't enough, we have a professional crypto attorney coming up in the second half of the show, Sasha Hodder. She is a partner or principal with Greg Karsh, who's been a friend of the show quite a bit, and they are at DTL Law Group, and she's going to cover a lot of everything about crypto, and we're all going to be much more wiser about crypto after Kara and Sasha get done with us. Well, that, of course, means Kara Haas is here. Of course, I already tipped my hat on that and tipped my hat to her for the show prep that she's provided. Kara, how have you been?
I've been good. I hope I can live up to the expectations and deliver some interesting news, nonetheless, or some additional insight on what Bitmain's been up to.
All of the above, I'm sure. And then also coming up here, and he will help explain everything to us in just a moment. That, of course, is the co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com, the columnist thousands and ten thousands of people follow on TradingView.com, GoldBug1, a.k.a. Andy. Hey, Andy, how's it going?
Good morning, Henry. I hope you had a nice trip where you went and everything was going good there.
Well, everything was good there. I was in England and on the streets of London. I even saw an electronic billboard that said they would except Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency to advertise there, which just shows you how tough the advertising market is over in the streets of London. But
yeah, the pound's not looking very good right now.
Well, and we're going to find out about a lot of that and the advice going on SeekingCryptos.com, but we still have one more person we have to say hello to right now.
So you say that old and proves that I did.
I won't describe him. The music says it all. Good afternoon, Augie, and you and Andy, you're sharing the mic again. So.
Well, that's the loving part of the show, Henry. We have a fraternity, sorority combo here that's rather wonderful. I'm not sure. I have to ask the question, where is Sabine? Has she dropped out? Or
no, she keeps promising to come in. Well, let's just take role now of the absence an AWOL participant. Colleen, Crypto New Girl, I see her on Twitter. She's doing some things. She was traveling a lot this summer. Hopefully someday we'll hear from her again. Leonard from Byte Federal, Lee from Byte Federal, they participate in the... By the way, have you got your WhatsApp working so that you can see all the things that Andy's been addressing?
For some reason, I can't seem to get it.
Okay, well, you got people here.
The definition...
By design.
It's probably best there.
Well, the threads are so frail, I mean, and the definition's incomplete. It's something I can willingly ignore. But nonetheless, my skepticism is the nature of this beast, so growl away.
Yeah. So from the Byte Federal, our perennial sponsor that we're very grateful for, Leonard and Lee are active and occasionally get to see Leonard more than Lee. Lee must be in a bunker somewhere down in Englewood or somewhere south of here. But Leonard comes out in the daylight, and I understand they're adding employees at Byte Federal. They're in four states now, so he's a little bit busy. Sabine, I guess she has family commitments a lot lately as far as children visiting her, and, you know, hopefully she'll be some behind back in the studio. And is there anybody we're missing? Of course, Alex is newly married. For people that from listen for a long time, remember Alex, he's got his hands full. So we right. So recovering here. So we'll be live in the studio for the weeks to come. By the way, I got to update the disclaimer and promo at the beginning. The call-in number is 941-745-1490. The long-time call-in number for this station is back and been working for a few months now. And so we'll be live. Augie is going out of the country for 2 weeks, I understand. He's going to the exotic foreign country of Canada. And we'll attempt to straighten them out in the same way he straightened the United States out as an ongoing project of his. And Cara will be here with us next week, right? But
yes,
you've got a lot
be.
Of commitments on your time coming up.
My busy season actually falls between the end of September and the end of the year. So I may not. I may
How unusual for an accountant.
But I'm not a tax accountant. Most of my audits.
So what are you doing at the end of the year?
Mostly audits.
Christmas parties?
No. Clients, in particularly government contracts, are 930 year-end. And so most of the audits for governmental and even not-for-profits happen between 930 and 1231.
And I see you're wearing your Occupy Mars T-shirt.
Because I was told there'd be whiskey and weed here today. I thought that would be perfect.
You were wearing your audit shirt.
Yes, I'm gonna have my one of my cohorts take a picture, and this will be part of the calendar for the Henry Rain Show.
We have a calendar.
Yeah, I'm on the cover. Don't you remember?
I've tried to block that out of my mind, but so and Andy. Andy is, I guess, going to be sidekicking here for his foreseeable future. And I can't tip the hand totally right now, but I did speak to First Lady of Radio here at the station briefly before the show, Valerie, and about the project that we're talking about. So more from SeekingCryptos.com. You'll have to stay tuned for that on the radio at SeekingCryptos.com as it becomes a reality, but very soon, much more mastering all media for crypto is SeekingCryptos.com, I think we can say.
Absolutely. We got some big things coming up.
All right. So let's try and get into something that actually has to do with what the topic of the show is about, the Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, and... We'll get to that right now.
I tell you, I've got news for you. Mm-hmm.
speaking of stories not ringing true, I did not get any pre-produced audio off CNBC or Bloomberg. Bloomberg was practically euphoric in the falling of the Bitcoin price on the clip I was listening to, and they were giggly, and that was just the guys. And the woman was very strange body language going on with the woman on that clip. I'll have to share it with you all later because it wouldn't do any good on the radio. But they were quite euphoric about all the things. It was, you know, Goldman Sachs pulling the crypto desk plans. It was Shapeshift asking know your customer questions. Actually, neither CNBC or Bloomberg at any of the listings I heard talked about the massive short position that was taken on the market a day or two before the crash, or the movement of the Bitcoin in the Silk Road alleged wallet. So all those things were in the mix, but let's start with ones that maybe have the most significance or at least the most weight in dollar value or Bitcoin value. In a recent transaction data, a popular darknet site, by the way, so it was, what was it? It was Wednesday or Thursday that the price dropped. Anyway, it was around 7,400, had a nice steady building, small incremental, like, you know, basing out, as you can call with Bitcoin, you know, basing out for a day, you know, like in a $50 or $100 range and then taking another stair step up. It was almost for 2 weeks now it was doing that, looking really constructive. And, of course, SeekingCryptos.com was saying you got to watch for the pullbacks, and they were giving the different. But even SeekingCryptos.com didn't expect a 12-hour, $1,000 drop.
That was pretty massive, I mean, I have to admit.
Yeah. So, anyway, in recent transaction data, a popular dark net site, Silk Road, which sells drugs online, seems to have moved U.S. dollar $1 billion worth of Bitcoin from its wallet. Now, wherever this particular website is that I'm taking, the syntax on some of this English is a little bit rough, so bear with me on this. Now, the Silk Road was no longer operational, so that tense they used in the sentence there is a little rough. Anyway, Silk Road was launched in February of 2011 as the first modern darknet market. The platform allowed users to buy and sell illegal things online, and supposedly legal things too, but why would you? The Silk Road, however, was shut down by the FBI in October of 2013. A year later, Silk Road 2.0 was launched, but was also shut down, and the alleged owner, Ross Ulbricht, was arrested and sentenced to life in prison. Actually, he was sentenced to two life terms in prison, which was a real long time. And actually, when we get to Sasha Hodder, on her website, SashaHodler.com, she actually has a free Ross page where she's speaking out about what I guess they feel is the injustice there. And we'll find out more about that in the second half of the show, so stay tuned. Anyway, since the inception operations being around the same dates as that of the Bitcoin inception and the popularity Silk Road garnered, it's believed that this Bitcoin is in a connected wallet. The original wallet owned 111,000-plus Bitcoin and now Bitcoin Cash because of the fork, currently valued at $844 million. Seems the owner of this, and now since all Bitcoin, let Carr explain this a little bit. So wallets are public ledger information, correct?
Correct. You don't always necessarily know who owns the wallet, but any transaction in and out of the wallet is publicly available.
So if someone's scanning Bitcoin wallets and whatever the massive public ledger there is of all the Bitcoin wallets, something even with 800 million does stand out.
Absolutely.
And that's one you want to watch.
For sure. And there are wallet watchers who have particular ones. We all know I have an affinity for a few Tether wallets. But you can pick out particular
addresses. When Gucci comes
out
with the Tether wallet, we're getting you that for Christmas.
We need to get her the shirt. Tether me.
But that in this case, I would suspect that there were particular wallet watchers who are watching that address and when there was activity moving from it.
Right. So the actual activity goes back to last time there was activity in this $800 million wallet was 2014, March, over 4 years ago. Anyway, the 111,000 Bitcoin, it seems that the owner of the huge hashtag Silk Road-related wallet is moving funds actively since for 3 days, dividing into chunks of 100 coins to sub-wallets. These 60,000 coins were moved in chunks, not all together. They moved in 30,000, 20,000, 10,000, 5,500, and then 100, just moving and spreading it out. So you don't really know where it's coming from, how it's being moved around, where it's going, unless you are an obsessive wallet watcher.
It is possible. You can figure it out.
Yeah. But breaking down 110,000 bitcoins into 100 wallets, that's what... 1,000 wallets, right?
Yeah, I'm checking my wallet to see if I got an extra 100 bitcoins.
Yeah,
maybe it was like a donation or something.
Well, look under the chairs here. Maybe somebody dropped some bitcoin. Anyway, the car is looking. anyway, the wallet was last active March 9th. So what the theory here is anybody that's moving it that way is going to be getting rid of it because it's been safe where it was. So they're going to put it out there. Now, this is ties in not directly but coincidentally with something else that was suspicious in the activity in the crypto space. There was a 10,000 Bitcoin, which, you know, it's just basically about a tenth of the 111,000 Bitcoin, but still significant because it's $74 million at the time, was taken as a short position on Sunday. And this is just a couple days before, supposedly, Goldman Sachs was going to announce that they were sidelining the cryptocurrency trading desk. Now, I believe this was on BitMEX is where the short
position. It was on Bitfinex, too. There was a huge spike in Bitfinex, too.
Okay. Yeah, well actually, just in general, the short positions are at a new record again. Explain that a little bit, Andy. When we were at the high, you can understand why people are going short. But now that we had the crash, why did the short positions gain even more?
That I have no idea. If I was short right now with how the chart looks, I'd be looking to exit. But
yeah, that's not the right answer for somebody that's a co-founder of.
You have a range-bound market here. So when money's either in the market or it's out of the market. And so when shorts pile in, it's an artificial putting money on the sidelines. That money has to come back in. So, I mean, the guy that shorted early, I mean, obviously he's in the money because it was like at 7,500. I'm sure that guy's long gone now. So, you know, I'm actually the last three times that this is, or the last two times that this has happened in these big spikes, it's resulted in a short squeeze. I mean, just at this, actually at this level too.
Okay, now first repeat after me as you, the co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com, I do not say I do not know. I say there's a lot of theories to this, Henry.
Well, I don't get caught up in all that. I mean, the Silk Road thing, that could have been somebody that had the wallet and was dividing it amongst. And it could have been a big trade. I mean, what they could have done is it could have been an off-the-exchange trade and a broker dealt it into several different, chopped it up, and it was all done behind the scenes, and now they're transferring the money around. You don't know what that was. Everyone's saying, oh, they're going
to
dump it.
Let's go back to the short position here. So $74 million.
That's a lot of short.
And they're not actually selling their own Bitcoin. They're either holding Bitcoin or Tether or something in an account, and then the exchange is loaning them the Bitcoin to sell in short. Just like if you were in the stock market, you're borrowing the stock from your broker or whomever in the brokerage, another account, and you're selling those, not ones you really own. You just have capital to back it up. So a couple things happen there. First off, what exchanges, evidently Bitfinex and BitMEX, would accept a $74 million short?
Okay exchange.
Right. But I mean...
Was it solid,
It looked like an options order where somebody just went in there and just sold 10,000 of them. Had to absorb in the market.
Well, and there's other points here, because we've talked about the leverage that some of these exchanges allow you to use, 100 times leverage. So does that mean that you let somebody with just 740,000 dollars worth of stuff, take a $74 million short position? We don't know the answer to that, but that's one thing to think about.
Or Bitfinex and BitMEX did it themselves.
Well, then there's the next thing.
For sure, there is that.
The market doesn't move when that position is taken. But now everybody in the exchange had a heads up to it. Everybody in the management and the administration of that exchange. And don't they decide to pile on too then?
Yeah. Yeah, we saw that with, right before they announced on Coinbase, we saw the spikes in the coins. So we have the
massive leverage that can be used. Mm-hmm. We have if you call it insider knowledge or whatever, because I also have to think a 74 million short position, that might be an over-the-counter trade, not just on the exchange itself. Is that possible?
I mean, it could be. I don't know exactly what that short, when you see the short interest there, what that represents.
By over-the-counter, we mean when you're not seeing that. Like, if you're looking at a trading screen, you're not seeing those, whether they're 100.
I mean, that order
should
have moved the market.
Yeah, somebody is making that, and it's off the books until they reveal it.
Yeah, and that's a valid point. I mean, it could have been an over-the-counter.
So it really speaks to whether either of these theories are true as far as the reason why we have the big move. I mean, it really speaks to the Wild West and the need for regulation on a lot of these.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
really, there really is. I started revisiting the wash trading a bit more when I was looking at, in particular, some of the, like,
explain wash trading first. What's that?
So, wash trading is where an individual or two familiar parties are trading amongst themselves. It's best explained, I think, just in yourself. In fact, Bitfinex, the blog uncovering Bitfinex, he or she explains it very well in that if you had something on eBay up for sale. So if I had a gold ring that I was selling on eBay, I could bid it up myself. That's almost what you're doing when you're wash trading, going back and forth. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
And so on occasion, I might get stuck getting suckered into buying my own gold ring. But in the meantime, I brought all this excitement.
Let's change it just a little bit. You have a Bitcoin. And you bought it for $6,300.
Yes.
You sell it to me for $6,301. I sell it back to you for $6,302. So in the course of this, we get it up to $6,400. We've actually just washed out our dollar profits back and forth.
Correct.
And then we sell it to Andy for $6,401, and we split the profit.
Well, you have all the fees, so I don't understand how that works on here, because if you're a market taker, you pay the...
Well, and that's where a lot of this comes in, where it's familiar wallets, for sure. And just like even going back to the different revenue models for the different exchanges, is that when you've got related parties rolling on these, and in particular one of the exchange or multiple exchanges.
You had the F-coin in one of the old shows.
Yeah, the F-coin.
Which was like generating F-coins out of thin air.
Oh, it definitely is.
For the transaction.
The exchange itself is bringing in a ton of Bitcoin and Ether, and then they're shilling out their F-coin as a reimbursement. And then with Bitfinex and Tether, you've got multiple parties now, and they do different rewards. There was something where one guy was, I can't remember what exchange it was, and if it was an article that we talked about collectively, but where... One of the exchanges was rewarding, I don't know, Bitcoin or some kind of coin.
I thought it was the F-coin.
There was one even more recent, though. I don't think it was F-coin.
Right.
But nonetheless, I mean, there's incentive by these exchanges to get people who can trade on leverage or get a significant amount in there.
And if you're rewarding with a coin you created and you're charging fees on that, you're giving your coin a value that it didn't have before. Mm-hmm. People start trading it, and you've got this huge supply that the more people trade it, the value of what you're holding, you make money for nothing.
You're definitely making...
Sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
You're definitely making money with nothing. And then in particular, like some, the exchanges that don't charge any fees, they won't report that information in volume. They won't count that volume up.
It's not a Ponzi scheme, because a Ponzi scheme has a real definition.
Andy just paying. Wanted to be like Augie.
So, all right, we got to get to Cara's feature before we get to Sasha's feature. It's all coming up. So let me just quickly hit the headlines here. So anyway, there was a top Goldman Sachs executive looked to clear the air Thursday about the bank's cryptocurrency. So I guess it was Wednesday we had the flash crash after reports that it was abandoning plan to open the trading desk for cryptocurrencies. Goldman Sachs chief financial officer Martin Chavez, quoting here, "I never thought I would hear myself use this term, but I really have to describe that news as fake news." He said Goldman is working on a type of derivative for Bitcoin because clients want it. The next stage of the exploration is what we call a non-deliverable forwards. These are over-the-counter derivatives. Won't go into that too much for you, but just they've got a product coming, and they're going to make some money on it. So they're not giving up their plans. When we talked about exploring digital assets, it was going to be an exploration that would be evolving over time. Maybe someone who is thinking about our activities here got very excited that we'd be making markets as a principal in physical Bitcoin. And as he got into, they realized part of the evolution is not here yet. Anyway, the point being, they're still deeply involved. And if you don't think they're deeply involved, check out what's happening in their subsidiary, Circle Internet Financial. They announced a new hire for a four-year stint. After a four-year stint in the Department of Homeland Security of Gus Coldabella. He will be responsible for the company's legal compliance regulatory. Circle is the company that bought Poloniex Exchange and is sort of like a Robin Hood-ish kind of the app, the cryptocurrency stock trading app. So they're building up a portfolio of products to sell to people. They are a subsidiary of Goldman Sachs, maybe not technically, but as an investment capital kind of situation. So they're deeply involved here, and Goldman Sachs sure knows what's going on with their money. Anyway, they hired this son to work on the company as it intensifies scaling efforts and to navigate the legal complexities, et cetera. Well, if that was just one thing, you'd say, well, that's a good move. Coldabella oversaw more than 1,700 lawyers. And, I mean, just lawyers, 1,700 is sort of a scary thought. Anyway, so that's what he was doing there. He's going to be joining a team that they've already put together, including Robert Bench, former compliance officer of Santander, PwC, and U.S. Treasury. Also, Carla Caravo, an 18-year veteran of the SEC and FINRA. Charles Heenan, this is all in this one company, former securities and commodities lawyer at Swiss RE and Citigroup. That's just a start, because it also includes Blair Holiday, former compliance officer at ICE, that's the New York Stock Exchange, and Paysafe, Lisa Gofero, who joined the team as senior legal counsel. And back all the way in July, the company hired Benedict Nolans, a former Goldman Sachs executive, and is its new head of global regulatory affairs. Global regulatory affairs of all this. So I think Goldman Sachs is definitely in the space.
Yeah, and, you know, they're a big player, period. I mean, none of us here at the table, with the exception of Augie, is probably getting an account at Goldman Sachs anytime soon. So, and I say that sarcastically, but...
say what you want.
Nonetheless, I mean, there's some big money coming in. So, I mean, people that think Bitcoin's going to 2,000 and that, I think that's crazy when you have people like Goldman Sachs and that are investing into these products.
And just a real... sequel to that little article, Korea Post, South Korea's National Postal Service, which oversees $112 billion investment fund, has sought Goldman Sachs assistance in what? Learning about cryptocurrencies. And Kang Sang-ju, the president of the Korea Post, said in an interview that he discussed cryptocurrencies with David Solomon, Goldman's chief executive. Just a little conversation between two CEOs there about, you know, this crazy little cryptocurrency thing. A couple more quick ones here. Looks like as we move towards the Solidex Bitcoin ETF decision, supposedly at the end of September, but will probably be postponed out maybe to March as we go forward, but something will be said about it towards the end of September. We have a new Trump administration appointee on the SEC who has said favorable things about cryptocurrency. If he were to join with the Hester Peirce, and if Jay Clayton, T. tilts towards cryptocurrency. It could be a favorable decision on the ETF. The previous Trump appointee, Robert Jackson, does not look very favorable to it. And then there will be another new appointee because the former Obama appointee will be expiring on their term.
And Jay Clayton has ties to Goldman Sachs. I think his wife was a wealth manager there, and he was an attorney.
Won't affect any decision.
No, absolutely not.
Conspiracy.
It all
you
goes to Goldman
Jones,
Sachs.
Man.
Yeah, right?
All right, and finally, that whole...
Except I'm still on the radio.
Coinbase. Well, he's still on the radio.
Yeah.
But you're still on Twitter.
I'm still on Twitter.
Well, you know, I got blocked on Facebook.
You're still on Google.
Yeah.
So that's a whole other story we'll have to talk about sometime. Because just the censorship, you know, you go back 2004 when I was first doing the morning show here, and the resources you could find everything, and I'd pull up stories from the Middle East. I remember Fallujah and pictures. I would be a freelance photographer that was right there in the battle of Fallujah. You'd look at they were disturbing, but you would be looking at the pictures every morning telling the world what was going on, or... You know, we were on the Internet, so we're telling the world. But I feel like I'm blocked from all kinds of sites now that I can't get anywhere near where I used to find the information.
I mean, Alex is a piece of crap. I mean, let's not deny it. But, I mean, it's pretty – he's – oh, come on, whatever. I mean, he's so far out there. But it definitely sets a hard precedence. I mean, it definitely sets a hard precedence.
All right. So, finally, the Coinbase is in talks with BlackRock, the $6 trillion Wall Street giant, about perhaps launching their own ETF, exchange-traded fund. All right, so let's go to a break. We'll get started on Kara's piece. We'll then bring Sasha Hodder, a.k.a. Sasha Hodler, in on the second half of the show. We'll get her comments on Kara's work, and we will get more about what Sasha's looking at this week. You're listening to The Henry Rain Show. If you're a business owner, you need to start listing right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a bi-federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on the Henry Rain Show. Or just go to BiteFederal.com and fill out a simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BITE, B-Y-T-E. That's 877-855-2983, or go to BiteFederal.com.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage. Quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
Hey, this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock. Make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
Henry Rain Show here at WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday at 12:05 to 1:30 p.m., and we're back live in the studio again this week and expect to be that way for the foreseeable future. Those of you that were listening to the reruns the last couple of weeks, we appreciate you sticking with us through all this, and hopefully you're enjoying today's show. In the studio, we have blockchain CPA Kara Haas. We have the co-founder of SeekingCryptos.com, Goldbug One, a.k.a. Andy, and, of course, Augie, who will be on vacation, but will be back in a couple weeks. He's here today. He'll be gone a couple weeks, and then he'll be back in the studio, and we'll expect him over the long haul here, too. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with attorney Sasha Hodder, and she is the host of the Hoddlecast, also known as Sasha Hodler, and we'll get to that and more in just a moment. But we've been keeping you waiting. Let's not do it any longer.
Talking trouble. That token was trouble.
Well, that was the wrong one. Boy, that's what happens when you stick around and don't come around here for a couple weeks. Let me see if I can do it right this time. Get the proper liner for this. Well.
Was
trouble. Close enough.
Oh, I love that. No, that was it.
That's supposed
that was
to be
spot
the,
on.
That's supposed to be the outro. I should relabel this. Let me.
We'll fix it next
week. This is the one that's supposed to be the intro.
Talking trouble.
There's a trouble. There it is. You're right. Yes. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah. We're back and forwards and everything else with Kara's here on Trouble Token. But she's here to talk about the Bitmain IPO. What is Bitmain?
So Bitmain is the largest Bitcoin miner and producer of the ASIC chips. And those in particular are the application-specific I think it's integrated circuit chips that are Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, a couple of the other cryptocurrencies, Litecoin. Some of those, as opposed to the GPU chips that can be used also for gaming, they specifically specialize in those. They also own some of the biggest mining pools, Antminer, and also I believe BTC.com. And in doing so, that makes up about 42% of all the Bitcoin mining. Well, they're looking at doing an IPO and going public in Hong Kong. And there's some theories as to why that might be. In particular, they're thinking that at this point they're going to They're selling at a loss. They may have a surplus of inventory. They also spent all their glorious free cash flow that they had in 2017 on acquiring Bitcoin Cash. So, and a few other.
Wait a minute. Because you said they spent it acquiring it. Didn't they just get it because they had mined all this Bitcoin and held all the Bitcoin?
I think they bought it. Or they used the money to I don't think that they necessarily mined it. I mean, they could. There is certainly the possibility that they do that, but I think number one, there's no standard for how to account for these things in financial accounting, and I'm not sure how the Chinese
Hong
actually
Kong
do
crypto
it.
Gap?
So I am getting ready to look at Hong Kong crypto gap. Because it is different from the international standards and from U.S. GAAP. But there is thought, so whether it went directly or indirectly into these alts, I would say that there was still money spent acquiring it. Like, I don't think that they just,
I'll
just
chomping at the bit here. Let me hear what he has to say.
Overhead costs or upfront costs, right?
It could very well be that. Computing power, electricity.
Most operations are usually calculated at 60% overhead.
I mean,
before you get any profit or any value. That's what you have
so
to
So it
through.
Could be through the overhead costs that Augie's talking about, that they would have spent the cash to do this. In particular, even through, like, if you look at, I think, the price floor, like, what your break-even point is to mine a Bitcoin right now at a discount, I think, is around $4,600, maybe.
That's what some of your show
some people have.
I'm sure if it was on the internet, it was true.
Let
me back up here, because and we have our guest standing by. We'll bring her in shortly to straighten us all out on this. But what I thought was that the $328 million loss on Bitcoin Cash would be because at one time they had it on the books for over $2,000 and many times over $1,000. And now it's way below that. So wouldn't you have to recognize that as a loss on your balance sheet?
So in theory, if you're doing it gap-wise and you're registered with the SEC, yes. I don't know whether they and none of these. I mean, these are essentially just floated financial metrics on purpose in advance of the idea of an IPO.
Okay.
So that. I mean, being a private company, you're in control.
Well, let's just summarize it this way then. 6 months or a year ago, they looked much richer than they were holding on this Bitcoin
cash.
That's
a perfect way to say it. And in theory, yes, most people do recognize the loss, or even if you impute it in doing so, but they also have plenty of inventory of these mining chips that would indicate.
We're talking about Bitmain, the world's largest Bitcoin miner, and their possible IPO that's coming forward. Go ahead on.
Operating costs don't change. Does the volume change the value of the operating costs? And I think that's what's key here, because if each one has a minimum cost of something, that's what's not.
Well, the value of the inventory changes, and they can't sell their inventory because they're sitting on so much Bitcoin cash because they created so much Bitcoin and they got a Bitcoin cash for it all. In fact, if you go back, and Andy can confirm.
Well, there's two different types of inventory.
Let me go back here just a minute, because Andy, you remember. I remember when Bitcoin Cash was at $300 about a year ago, actually coming real close to just a year ago, and you said right on this show, when it breaks up above 300, it's going to go on a run. And I remember one night, it usually looked like I've talked about so many times, picking up my phone, looking at Bitcoin Cash is $300, going on how do I buy Bitcoin Cash, because it was not easy at that moment in time. And Bitmain and Roger Ver, their names were being floated all over the internet as being behind this push to, and then we saw the transaction speeds on Bitcoin plummet. We saw all this activity in Bitcoin in a matter of days. It ran up to about $2,700, at least for a minute in time, and you know that there seemed to be something. We talk about manipulation. It seems like that was happening then.
There's a problem with this. You're talking about the opportunism of a change in value going up and risking going down. And if your operational costs are spread between 2 years versus a single year, the operational costs are half as much in two-year period as they are in a single year. That's what's key here.
But they got it all in a windfall.
Well, it's a windfall only if you can avoid those operational
there was no there was no cost to getting the Bitcoin Cash. Once the fork was made, it was negligible. You just get free money.
And I follow what you're saying there in particular. And some of the inventory that I was referencing were the actual chips, like, used to do the mining, more so than the actual cryptocurrency inventory. But going back to where you are there, that is a very plausible and correct theory.
Well, let's go ahead and bring our guest into this. We'll get her. She got sent the 51-page rundown. So I'm sure she's pored over this like any good attorney would, with
all
her reading glasses
about
on
all
at
of
once.
Us is that everybody has a different angle.
Well, there
way
is a
of
thing called baffling with bullshit. So I'm wondering if that's where we are.
Let's go to our guest and.
Oops.
Hi, everyone. This is the HODLcast.
Well, if you've heard that before, then you're familiar with our next guest, Sasha Hodder. She can be found on YouTube with the HODLcast, and you'll get great information, unlike some shows you may be listening to. And you will find her also at sashahodler.com. Let's welcome her to the show. Sasha, thank you for making time for us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been listening along so far and a fan of your guys' work for as soon as I discovered it a couple months ago when you had my partner Greg on for an episode. So thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm glad we didn't scare you off listening to all that. Now, you know, your specialty is, let me give you a proper introduction here because I have all kinds of resume information for the audience, but the important thing is to go to sashahodler.com, H-O-D-L-E-R, Sasha is S-A-S-H-A, and Sasha is part of DLT Law Group, Distributed Ledger Technology is what the DLT stands for, where she focuses on the fintech sector. She is a member of the Florida Bar and the United States Federal Courts. She began her career in the virtual currency arena in 2014, so she's like practically like a grandma of cryptocurrency. And she has worked on private placement token offerings, ICOs, much more, simple agreements for future tokens. But she's also has more mainstream info and expertise in money service business regulation, money transmission license. She's helped with white paper. I mean, this is about a page and a half. I could just read on and on. One of the things that caught me, though, and really piqued my curiosity, you started your career as a Series 7 licensed trader for TD Ameritrade. How did that come to be?
Well, I was always kind of interested in the stock market. My dad was a stockbroker, so in my younger years, I studied Bachelor of Commerce at Western in London, Ontario. I'm Canadian. And I was actually dating a guy at the time. I was working as a personal trainer part-time in school, and he was working at TD as a trader, and we were comparing salaries. It looks like maybe I should hit the books for the Series 7, and it would make a better career choice than the fitness industry. So...
That
got me started at the bank.
But the we're going to be all over the place, and we will come back to the Bitmain IPO and get your information on this. But since you brought up, you were the personal trainer, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So right here, I have told Cara when we were getting you on that having looked at your website and some of your other presence on the Internet, that you two are like twin sisters of different mothers. Because you're into triathlons and all this
and
other
I
stuff.
And I was a triathlete, has been.
So have you met Cara? Have you met Sasha?
We have met. We had a chance to meet at Block Spaces.
So have you hung out together yet?
Not beyond Block Spaces yet.
So this is like the first time.
So it is.
Suggesting you guys should be best buddies.
Right.
I agree. I've made some new friends too. I just moved to Tampa in March, so still kind of getting accustomed to everything here, but yeah, Cara, I always love your articles too, and your presence on this show. Maybe if you ever want to work out,
there we go. we don't want to suggest that or start a plan on the Henry Rain show because Henry gets really excited and starts like wanting to enter us into American
Have
Ninja.
Have you ever thought about American Ninja Warrior, Sasha?
No, I haven't.
One more fantasy for Henry.
Fantasies are only good when they can be turned into reality. I got double the prospects now.
There's
with
always
the,
hope,
with the
Henry.
Henry
There's
Rain
always
Show
hope.
T-shirts up on the giant wall they climb. This could be big.
I'm just keeping my mouth shut.
On the back of your T-shirt, though. That's
all
okay.
Is eternal, Henry.
All right. Okay, I guess I better go a different direction.
That's for a different.
But you have watched it, right?
Yeah. I have, yeah. And funny enough, just last week I went to my hairdresser's and he was telling me the girl he had right before me was on the show. I forget her name, but he showed me her Twitter and everything. So, yep.
Nice. So we can have
team.
The hair. Yes, we can have the
team. Odds are up.
And we already have the hairdresser to do the hair.
Yeah, he did these long blue extensions. for her. So she looks like a mermaid.
Sounds like I'm getting competition for the centerfold here now.
No, I'm thinking we got DLT Law Group on one part of the T-shirt, the Henry Rain Show, Seeking Crypto. We got sponsorship for you.
Well, the other question is, you're a digital art enthusiast, right?
Yes.
So have you seen some of the stuff that Kara has put out in terms of art?
I haven't seen your art, Kara, no.
So it's actually Augie's. I just post it. So we'll make sure that you get to see some of that. That was from some of the early day.
And maybe my boyfriend does a podcast, Art on the Blockchain. Maybe
you
guys on to talk about the art theme.
Where is he in Tampa?
He's here right now, yeah.
Yeah, he's in Tampa.
We probably should meet.
Well, welcome to Kumbaya Radio,
exactly.
Streaming consciousness right over the airways here. And we were talking about something that was related to this show at one time or another. But instead, we've explored all kinds of aspects of the people here that you're listening to, and we'll probably do some more of that. We have, just to recap, because you probably have lost track of this without the scorecard, we have Kara Hotz in the studio. That's the blockchain CPA. Could you please say hello so we can get the voices straight here?
Yes, indeed. Good to be here, Henry.
Okay. And Augie is our resident artist, historian, professional, contractor, et cetera. And he is all about art on the blockchain here. At least he was drugged into that.
Yeah, Sasha, it's nice to talk to you. I thought I was talking to Kara for a moment.
Well, with that, let me get Sasha to say hello again so people can distinguish her voice from Kara's, since it's confusing Augie, and he was looking at Kara's mouth move.
Hi, everyone. This is Sasha.
And the voice that nobody indistinguishes is Goldbug1, a.k.a. Andy.
Good afternoon, Sasha.
Yes. Oh, he turned up the bass for you.
Barry,
a.k.a. Barry White.
He showered because he thought you were coming here.
I did.
Is Sasha in studio?
All right. Well, now I've stalled all the way to the station ID at the top of the hour. You're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay. Let's get one more commercial break out of the way right now, and then we'll come back with Sasha Hodler of the Hodlcast and the rest of the crew here. You're listening to The Henry Rain Show. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bight Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bight Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bight Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bight Federal ATM near you. Go to BightFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on The Henry Rain Show.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage. Quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
Henry Rain Show here at WWPR 1490 AM. Again, heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. to 1.30 p.m. Kara Haas in the studio, Augie in the studio, Golba Gwen, a.k.a. Andy in the studio, Sasha Hotter on the phone. And just to maintain the stream of consciousness and tell everybody in the studio and Sasha, I didn't realize how big-time radio we are now. WWPR is starting to carry Tampa Bay Rays games a little bit late in the season, but right at the time they're serving. Yeah, not every game, though, but they'll be on Monday at 7 p.m. here and Wednesday at noon, plus some other games later on. We'll be back in the studio. I don't know how that happened, but it's happened, and, hey, good for WWPR. And you got to use the bike, Augie. Actually, you better not use the mic.
Right. That might be a good idea. Spin them off.
All right. So before all the digression and regression and that happened on the radio here, we were talking about the Bitmain IPO, the largest mining company in the world, also a manufacturer of semiconductor chips for Bitcoin mining. And Kara, I imagine did they start as a semiconductor company and then went into Bitcoin mining?
That sounds about right. So they're relatively young though. So 2013. So for the most part, their main thing has been creating the ASIC mining chips.
Okay.
So the chips are their main thing.
But the main point of the article, and we'll ask Sasha's opinion on this if she's had a chance to review it, is profit margins are going down. They're showing a loss on Bitcoin Cash. Whatever our theories are of why that is, that's the case.
Which you do bring some interesting ones.
And thank you. And we have companies like Tencent and SoftBank that were alleged to be investing in the IPO that now deny that, although they've either sold or licensed or given their subscription to the IPO to limited partners or others that can take advantage of it. So, Sasha, have you had a chance to look at this at all? Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, I've looked at it a little bit. I think it was a surprising move by them to want to go the IPO route just because of all the information that it forces them to disclose. And I think, you know, them selling Bitcoin to buy Bitcoin Cash in such a large quantity, and I think there's been a lot of questions around whether or not their finances are being reported accurately. I don't like what I'm seeing off the from the bird eye view that I have of it, and I appreciated Kara going through it all as she did. And I think the main thing she pointed out too was the numbers, like how they're doing their accounting, and that's what I've seen a lot of articles questioning that as well. So
is this like a Tesla accounting nightmare or an Enron accounting nightmare?
Oh, that's a
question.
That's a very good question. Which one you would? So
I'd go earlier in the alphabet.
Good answer.
So I take it then that the DTL Law Group will not be handling the IPO.
No. Well, I can't speak for Greg, I guess, but I'm not a huge fan of Bitcoin Cash, and they're
one of the things you said there, we're just speculating on. I said they had their wealth of Bitcoin Cash just from the fork. But you're saying that they sold some of their Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin Cash?
Yeah, I guess one of the guys at Blockstream put it on his Twitter. He had an image. It was Samson Moe. He put an image showing their pre-ICO investment deck that shows they sold huge amounts of Bitcoin to acquire the Bitcoin Cash in the early part of 2018. And that could be what, you know, a lot of people are surprised Bitcoin Cash has managed to stay even, you know, as high of a price as it is, and maybe those purchases were part of the, keeping that price going.
Well, no question for you. Why do you not like Bitcoin Cash?
I just find it's a little disingenuous the way that it's been marketed as the real Bitcoin. And, you know, we have Craig Wright here saying he's Satoshi, and just some of the, you know, I think it's kind of been an attack on Bitcoin with the way they were spamming the network. And, yeah, so to me it just seems like an attempt to, you know, it's just been a marketing ploy without a lot of technology behind it.
But you know, I mean, all's fair in love and war. I mean, you would think, hey, you want to be number one, you know, you got to crush the competition.
Well, let's just go there for a second, because now that we have Sasha clearing us up a little bit on this, and you say that was the early part of 2018, so that would have been after the peak price of Bitcoin Cash. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think the peak happened when they got listed on Coinbase, and then, and I think during that run-up, like, you know, once it was on Coinbase, I think a lot of new people were getting into cryptocurrency for the first time using Coinbase and not understanding the history of, you know, what these different things are. So they'd buy Bitcoin Cash thinking they're buying Bitcoin. And
it's cheaper. And it's cheaper, too. Yeah. Hey, look, I got Bitcoin for $1,200. I don't know what you're paying $6,000 for.
So if you're this massive company that's already sitting on a lot of Bitcoin Cash, and you want your massive amount to go up in value, then you start liquidating Bitcoin, which then drives up to the, or rather increases the time it takes for Bitcoin transactions, clogs up the network, and you're holding back your Bitcoin Cash so the same thing doesn't happen on the Bitcoin Cash network, and you're supporting the price on that. I mean, it seems like, for conspiracy theorists, I don't have to be Alex Jones to say that sounds like conspiracy.
I don't know. I made a lot of money on Bitcoin Cash. I thought it was a great trade. And, you know, now they got the smart, and actually,
what percent of your portfolio do you hold now with that?
I think it's about 10%.
And how much is Bitcoin?
Oh, 30.
Okay.
30. And it's going up. I'm going up. But
so,
well,
we need to move this along a little bit.
Yeah, that's fine.
Get to some of Sasha's topics here. While we're speaking about IPOs, though, a lot of talk, and we'll just tease it right now, that Binance is thinking about an IPO, and they said, just because they hired the executive with all the experience with IPOs doesn't mean they're thinking about IPOs. It's just good to have a guy like that around.
Just in case.
I always have a criminal attorney around, just in case.
Sasha, before we get into the topics that you suggested we might want to talk about, just tell us a moment about what's going on with DLT Law Group. That's DLT.com, right?
DLTlawgroup.com.
So you recently changed the name to that, and what's it mean? Is it growing? I see more associates on your website now. What's up with the law firm?
Yeah, it's growing. I think part of the reason for the name change was there's another group using WorldLock Incorporated, and we didn't want to get confused with them. So that was part of what was behind it, and I think Greg likes, you know, Jay Clayton uses DLT all the time to describe blockchain technology. So I think Greg likes, you know, the link there. But also sometimes a judge might not take it as take the firm as seriously if it's got a name like WorldBlock, really is associated clearly with blockchain, whereas DLT might just mean our initials, or, you know, they don't know what it really means if they're not in the space. So it's kind of a chameleon name in a sense. So
I think you should have sued the other company over the name.
Well,
you need an attorney referral? All right. So, and for people that are listening, who would be a potential client for DLT Law Group, whatever that is? Just Google Sasha Hotter. That's all you really need to know. So.
We work with anyone that's doing some kind of work in the cryptocurrency space. So I've been focusing a lot of my time on the money transmission side of things, like applying for the state-by-state money transmitter licenses where needed, or getting the FinCEN license and doing a lot of compliance reporting around that, and getting people established with that. So that seems to be, like, that's a constant, like, that's what when I started working for the ATM company back in 2014, just as I was starting law school, that was kind of a prevalent theme there, too. So I don't think that one's going to go away, the FinCEN regulations. And then also, it's, you know, anyone that's wanting to launch a coin or a token that's doing fundraising, I've worked with a lot of companies on that. And typically, I prefer doing the whole Regulation D route. Like, it avoids any possibility of getting into, well, I mean, there's still always possibilities if you have bad actors, but it, right now, if you're launching an ICO, it's such a gray area because you don't know if you're going to get in trouble with the SEC or not. But if you launch it as a Regulation D or some kind of exemption, you know that you're within the rules that are already laid out by the securities laws. So it's,
what's a Regulation D?
Oh, Regulation D is where you can sell any amount of money, like you can raise any amount of money, but you have to limit the sales to accredited investors. And there's some limits on how you advertise your investment. You have to file a Form D with the SEC and let them know that you're doing the raise. And you have to follow Regulation 144, which means the tokens need to be locked up for a year from the time that you sell them. So it's really, you know, companies that are trying to do ICOs typically don't want their tokens locked up for a year. So it's a big disadvantage that way. And there's not really anywhere to sell them. Right now, there's no security exchange. I think one, Athena, just launched one. But, it's, you know, that market is definitely going to develop. But right now, it's pretty, there's not a lot of spots where accredited investors can sell these Regulation D tokens.
So
but I think that's
so
where it's headed.
So it's similar to like when Snapchat went public and, you know, the initial investors had to hold on to their shares for 6 months. Is that the same type of thing?
Yeah. The Rule 144 has two distinctions. Some are 6 months and otherwise it's a 1 year. And I forget right now what the difference of why they're 6 months or a year, but I know for the tokens, because of the liquidity on them, I think the year is the more pertinent date that you have to follow.
Okay, we're speaking with Sasha Hadera from DLT Law Group, dltlaw.com. Group on the website? I should have posted it in my...
It sounds like you almost need like Speed Racer after that. DLT, Speed Racing.
DLTlawgroup.com.
Okay.
There we go.
The group is in there. DLTlawgroup.com. 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 And then, but really more important, is SashaHodler.com. SashaHodler.com. Which SashaHodler.com is where, also known Sasha Hodler, the attorney at DLTlawgroup.com, parks her pictures that you can see her. In her podcast.
That's why I showered today.
Okay. I think we've chilled enough, and we're going to move
thank
on.
God, thank God.
Thank God.
I even brought in breath mints.
And one thing Sasha's going to realize now is we do all this show prep and not seldom ever talk about any of it. Because as she was talking about these things, two shiny objects caught my mind to ask her about. You were talking about Section D?
Regulation D.
And don't ask me why this is on my mind right now, but I will tell you in the way I want to say it. The cannabis stocks are taking off right now. And those are all, there's TLRY, which is the Canadian company that maybe Sasha's family has something to do with up there, since they're all involved in the stock.
Just, Peronis or
just
something.
Kidding. And there's the pharmaceutical company in Great Britain that's big, large, and then Canopy, the Constellation
Canopy,
Group, reinvested in. Okay. But as I was doing searches, High Times, the magazine, many of you have heard, that also do the cannabis cups, has an IPO right now. But it's not being offered either as a Regulation D, or as a traditional IPO, or as a Dutch auction IPO. You can buy these shares with your credit card. I have not bought any. It's not a recommendation, but I did read through it. And it's some regulation that was fostered under the Obama administration to allow early investors to get in. Are you familiar with it, Sasha?
I'm not familiar with High Times IPO, but it sounds like you're talking about Regulation A+.
Agreed.
Which, I actually started a little company during law school that was, it's now fully registered with FINRA, but to do these kind of crowdfundings with the Regulation A+, you have to be, and I think there's only 13 of them that are approved, where if you get this FINRA seal of approval, which takes about a year for FINRA to vet the company, then you can offer these either Regulation A+ or the Regulation crowdfunding IPOs. Or they're like mini IPOs, basically. But
what type of companies are these targeted for?
Any kind of crowdfunding where you're giving equity as a piece of it.
So like a talk radio show.
We got a ways to make this. We need to do some
IPO. Seriously, what was the name of the regulation?
A plus.
Regulation A plus. But you need it's really hard to get approved for this. So like you basically have to get the SEC's approval ahead of time. So you have
so
to
do Kickstarter
years of financials.
Yeah. So how do these stocks? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. How do these stocks trade over the counter?
I can tell you the High Times one because I was looking at it to see if it seemed viable or not. They actually have an agreement with another company based out of the Caymans, I think, that is traded on an exchange. It may just be an OTC exchange, but they're going to merge after this IPO. So right now they're offering the shares for $11 a share, which if you look at their net revenue, I mean, it didn't look out of the question, but it didn't look all that good to me as it was. And then when you figure they're going to merge with this other company, it had a little bit of a scent to it all, and it wasn't that sweet scent either. So let's move on. I think it might be a good time. And another thing that was not on your list of things to talk about that we're going to ask you about, and, of course, this is not actual legal advice that we're asking you about. It's just for educational purposes and the intellectual exercise of it all. But you know about money transmitter licenses and other things like that. Diagonally across the street from the studio, they're not a sponsor, and I'm not pursuing them as a sponsor, although I'd certainly take their money. There's something called Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Shop, and they sell Bitcoin to people walking in off the street. Well, if someone came to you with an idea like that, not the Bitcoin Shop, not a real entity, but somebody came to you with an idea like that, what would be the first questions you would ask?
Well, yeah, they need to have a compliance. I'd ask if they have a compliance policy in place and if they're registered with FinCEN, because if they're taking cash and converting it into any type of cryptocurrency, then that would be considered an exchange. So it's broken down on FinCEN's website. They do a nice job of explaining what an exchanger is, and someone that's taking one type of currency, exchanging it for another type of currency, including any type of virtual currency, and they've been very clear that any type, even if you're moving Bitcoin to Litecoin and doing that for them, it would count as an exchange, and you need to register with them. And registering with them on a federal level is really easy. It doesn't really cost much. You just have to have your own anti-money laundering policy in place, and you have to report certain transactions, and you have to have a way to know your client. So you have to collect, like, who the person is, their name, their phone number, their address, a piece of identifying information like a driver's license or passport, and be fairly confident that the information you've collected is truly the person that you're dealing with. And then you have to make sure that person's not listed on any of the known, you know, political parties that we're not to do business with, or on the OFAC list, which is a national kind of list of who they think might be terrorists. And that might not be the only people that are on it, but basically that's what the goal of it is.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're doing all that.
Yeah.
Well, now question for you. I mean, now for question for you, that seems like a lot of a lot of hoops to go through to exchange what this, you know, the CFTC calls a commodity, and here FinCEN's saying it's a digital currency. So I guess you're just best off staying in gold, because you can go anywhere and get cash for that at any time, and you don't have to have any FinCEN stuff.
Yeah, because gold has that. you're dead on there. There's like a we're getting mixed signals from every regulator. And even the SEC recently has come out with mixed signals of, you know, at first they were saying they're all securities. Now they're saying they can become sufficiently decentralized to no longer be a security. And so, yeah, we don't have clear answers from any regulators on what the actual classifications are. I'm inclined to think it should be Bitcoin, at least, should be treated like a commodity. And I think a New York court has gone so far to give jurisdiction to the CFTC over Bitcoin. But there are exemptions for FinCEN. Like if you're regulated broker-dealer or things like that, there's a few things. If you're doing a closed-loop transaction, if you're selling your own personal Bitcoin and you're not taking any third-party's Bitcoin and transferring it to another third party, so there's little nuances that maybe they've got, you know, some way around that. But there's also different dollar values. When the transactions are over 3,000, that triggers a certain reporting requirement, and then over 10,000 triggers another reporting requirement. So if they're keeping their transactions really small and avoiding layering, like where the same person is coming and doing over $10,000 worth, but on multiple tiny transactions, they would still need to, you know, catch that's happening too. But
so, Sasha, actually getting to some of the material that you sent us, this would be a good segue and a good time. One of the stories was about Ripple and XRP and whether or not that's a security that I know class action suits against this or something? Something in litigation, right?
Yep.
And you sent an article about why the SEC hasn't made a statement on this. Could you summarize that for us?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I guess we need to back up to the a little history on the whole. Anyone that's selling an ICO, based on Jay Clayton, the commissioner of the SEC's comments earlier this year in February, I think it was February 9th, he said every ICO he had seen is a security offering. So, you know, that's what everyone. That's, you know, as an attorney, that's kind of what. Even though it's not case law saying that, it's, you know, that's what the SEC is giving guidance on. They're putting that on their website. That's what we have to go off of. And then we saw, fast forward a bit to June, we see them say, well, Ethereum, even though it was launched as an ICO, it's no longer a security because it's been sufficiently decentralized. And they said carving out, you know, we're not looking at the launch, we're looking at today, present state Ethereum. And then, so Ripple has, you know, that also Ripple did an ICO. And Ripple has a big community as well. And so they've been, I guess they reached out to the SEC asking why Ethereum was, why, you know, they got the special treatment of saying that they're not a security, but why is Ripple, you know, hasn't had anyone come out and say that they're not a security. And Ripple did get 3 class action lawsuits against it in the past couple months. I think they've been merged into one, and Ripple hired Mary Jo White, who's the former Jay Clayton of the SEC. Like, she was the former commissioner, so there's probably no one better qualified in this area of the law and no one better connected than her. So I think it's gonna fall in Ripple's favor. Like, the, you know, Jay Clayton's not gonna come out and say, "Oh, Mary Jo White, like, you know, you're wrong, and Ripple is a security," when there's a lot of points that can go back and forth on it. So I think for those who don't want all these cryptos to be considered securities, you know, Ripple's probably gonna charge the way forward. But it looks like they are with this article that came out, because basically, the SEC just kind of stepped back and said that they're not the deciding factor. Like, they said, notwithstanding any enforcement actions, the SEC has not made a determination as to whether any specific cryptocurrency may be deemed a security under the federal securities laws. So that was, you know, way different dialogue than what we're seeing in February. So, and then they also pointed to Director Hinman's remarks about the decentralization, and they kind of gave a disclaimer there too, saying that his marks aren't necessarily reflective of the commissioner's statements as a whole, which I think is kind of a funny thing to say considering the SEC as a whole put his remarks all over their website. So wouldn't that mean that it is reflective of what they're saying? So it's just getting mixed signals, basically.
It's like Tesla investors.
Yeah.
Actually, I need to tweet Elon. You know, I may find an attorney for him.
Yeah, you can hire Mary Jo as well.
Right. Good answer.
I got Mary Jane on the backside and Mary Jo, you know, covering it on the front, you know, it's good to go.
Oh, I like Elon. I liked him on Joe Rogan, and I was sad to see all the, all the kind of negative press he got the day after that. But now it looks like I saw something this morning that looks like it's all back, you know, positive, and I think the stock might have been a coordinated planned thing or something. Who
are
knows?
They going to go private, or are they going to stay?
They're staying public.
Who the hell?
I heard them talking about launching a token on the news a few weeks ago too. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
I missed that, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Sasha Hodder. Her website is sashahodler.com, sashahodler.com, and you can get links to her, the Hodlcast, her video podcast. It's also on YouTube. And so what are they going to find when they start checking out the Hodlcast?
Oh, you know, I started the podcast because I wasn't finding, I was having a lot of questions come up, like clients were asking me things that I didn't know the answer to pertaining to Bitcoin law. And so I started having to research it all and noticing, like before, you know, all throughout law school, I clerked at a firm that was focused on like insurance defense and breach of contract primarily, like a lot of business litigation. And anytime you had a question, you just go to a big law firm's blog and they have it beautifully laid out. Cases to look at, like it was just really easy to find information. And then, you know, looking up the crypto nuances, it just was, the information just wasn't out there. So I started every time I had a new question trying to make a blog of it, and then I just started reading my blogs into a video format, and then I started having a few guests on here and there, and I found that having the guests was a lot more fun than just reading the blogs into the video. So now I just, anytime I want to explore a new topic, I try and find someone that's fairly knowledgeable on the subject, and I'll just basically ask them all my questions, and hopefully some other people will learn from it as well. But my audience is not very big. Like, there's usually, you know, 20 to, one had, last week I got one with the high 89 views, so it is growing a little bit.
It is, that's awesome. No, that's great.
I love the eagle on the front of your website. That is very patriotic. I mean,
I had just bought Raven Coin when I
took a Raven?
And, yeah, the Raven Coin is like a
damn eagle to me. Not a raven. That's got the legs
it's
of a hawk
black.
And the head of an eagle.
It's all black.
Are you discriminating against black eagles? I mean, you only like white eagles?
Well, if it's patriotic, it's usually a bald-headed eagle.
Looks like it's an eagle.
Anyway, if you go to the site, as I was showing Andy right here, and he was fascinated, you got the videos, the blog. Oh, and I wanted to ask you about this free Ross page. Well, let me also tell people they also have links to YouTube, your LinkedIn, your Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all these things. We right back at the beginning of this the show, we were talking about the Silk Road wallet that people are speculating was being money moved out of. And we talked about the founder of Silk Road 2, Ross Ulbricht, and you have this page, freeross.org.
Yeah,
well, how come?
A little bit. He's not the founder of Silk Road 2. He's in jail for his involvement as the founder of, or like the website operator of the Silk Road 1. And then, so he got put double life plus 40
years. Let me just make sure I'm clear here. So we were mistaken when we read off. When I read off that other,
exactly.
That it was Silk Road 2. So it's Silk Road 1. So he's still involved with one of the Silk Roads.
And all the articles online about that big transfer are citing it as him being Silk Road 2 for some reason. Like one person got it wrong and then it trickled down all the way. But
okay. But he was involved with Silk Road 1.
Yeah, well, okay. He's in jail for it. It's stolen.
Okay, and so why
there
do
could
why
have been multiples of people operating that website. The evidence has been very inconclusive that it was just him. There's during the time that he was actually in solitary confinement, another person using the Dread Pirate Roberts login name, which was associated with Ross, that login name logged in and was on the website while Ross was, you know, clearly not able to be the one doing it. So this is not sure that it was just him.
So you're pointing out problems in the case of the government against him, but is there any doubt that initially he was involved with this?
No, there's not really any doubt. Yeah.
Okay, so what is the greater injustice then?
Well, so right now, well, just the sentencing, like, so the person that did run the Silk Road 2 website, which was way bigger in volume, way more transactions happened, he was in jail for 2 weeks, where Ross, doing a very, you know, supposedly doing a very similar thing, got 2 life sentences and 40 years. So that's an injustice right there. But they charged him with every, like, using the conspiracy theory charges. So every single drug deal that took place on that, you know, on that marketplace, he was charged with. And then he got the kingpin charge, which when they sentenced him to it, like, the judge had to basically turn herself into a pretzel to make that charge stick. And there was other problems, like the Andreas Antonopoulos was not allowed to be a witness for it, an expert witness, because the lawyer, Dreitel, failed to actually give Andreas's current LinkedIn information to the judge. He used some out-of-date stuff, even though Andreas's information was up-to-date at the time. So it led the judge to not accept Andreas as the witness, and then the FBI witnesses that were used quoted all kinds of wrong information to the jury, and if Andreas had have been the witness, he would have been able to rebut that information from a technical standpoint as being impossible. And then the same FBI agents that were witnesses actually stole a big chunk of the Silk Road coins, and they're in jail themselves now. And, you know, the jury didn't know that at the time, that they had this ulterior motive of stealing the coins and financial, you know, profits. So there was all kinds of problems with it. And also, you know, they just recently brought it up to cert for the Supreme Court. It got declined, but they were questioning whether or not you – so I guess there was another case that came out saying that the FBI and CIA, like, no one can search your cell phone without a warrant, but they searched Ross's internet history without a warrant outside of his house for, like, quite some time before arresting him at a library. So it's that was the question
of
whether
it seems a lot of dirty things were going on underneath the Comey administration there.
Yeah, yeah. So
and we wonder why we don't trust the FBI.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's remember J. Edgar Hoover, too. So we're not going to go down that path because it's going to go back decades. Let's, though, look at the clock and say we have to wrap up, and we have to thank Sasha Hotter for coming on. And what's the next HuddleCast going to feature?
Oh, I actually have Jared Figueredo, who's the founder of Chorus Pay. He's a member of Block Spaces. I don't know if you guys have met him or not, but he's going to be explaining the whole EOS network to me. So
and when should we look for that?
That's tomorrow.
Okay. So just go to sashahodler.com. Sasha, thanks for making time for us today. Thanks for all the preparation you did. And at least we used a little bit of it, and now you know what to expect when I hope you come back again.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure being a guest here, so thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh.
Adios.
Too late.
At least it was it was clean there.
Right. That was very nice, and showing diversity here.
So, well, want to thank Kara and Augie and
absolutely.
Andy. Augie, have a good trip over the next 2 weeks.
We'll safe trip, too.
Well,
to Canada. You never know when you might drown in French fries and gravy there.
I'll never eat French fries.
We'll miss you, Augie. We look forward to your return.
We'll be able to see you here next week. And Andy, hopefully, will be here. And maybe we'll have the announcements that we're working on in regards to seeing cryptos.com. And we will, I don't know if we have a guest scheduled for that or not, but we'll
we can find
get
one.
All that and more. Just tune in 12:05 p.m. next Saturday.
Every time it rains, it brings pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune falling all over the town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for